Thank you for agreeing to do this interview. And just to start out, could you please share your name, your business name, and the county in which your business operates?
Sam Thomas. Company name is Thomas Seafood of Carteret Incorporated, and we are in Carteret County, North Carolina.
Okay. And so just to get started, speaking a little more broadly, can you talk about the kinds of aquaculture species that you raise? And then if you could, for a lot of the interview, we'll be focusing mostly on the soft-shell crabs, but could you just start out by telling us kind of everything you work with?
Well, most of my experience has been in the crab industry, basically processing the Carolina blue crab. For processing for crab meat, we did a whole cooked product for the steamer markets, and more recently we got into shedding crabs for the soft shell market. We started shedding out here at this location, I think in probably in the mid 90s, and a relatively small operation. We've expanded a little bit almost every year, and a couple of years ago we went in and redid the shedding operation, installing new tanks, and went from a pass-through system on the water to a recirculating water system. We did that 2 years ago, and it's really been a big advantage to us. So, you know, as far as aquaculture, this will be our first venture into an aquaculture project. Shedding the crabs, I guess, falls under aquaculture, but really we're buying the product, buying what we call peeler crabs from individual fishermen. And we reach out and buy peeler crabs in the early part of the spring all the way down as far as Georgia, and then bring them back up here to shed them. And then as the peelers start showing up further north, it's almost like you can follow them. Starting in Georgia, maybe the middle of March, and South Carolina maybe a week or two later, and then North Carolina a couple of weeks behind that. By the time they get up here, we're well into April and toward the end of April before we see any crabs here in North Carolina, the peeler crabs. And then we'll follow on up to the North Carolina Virginia line and purchasing crabs from individual crabbers and sometimes from dealers, transporting them back down here and putting them in our shedder tanks and shedding them out. That is a form of aquaculture, but really we're only holding them for a short period of time. The project we're working with now is going to be a little more detailed and a little more along the lines of actual aquaculture or mariculture. And we will be buying or putting stock into a pond or ponds and raising the crabs up to the size we feel like is going to be ideal for our shedding operation. We will remove them from the pond and put them in our shedding tanks. Hopefully within 2 or 3 days after taking them out of the pond, they will shed and become a soft crab, and we will market them. So that's the theory behind this. Now, there's a lot of ifs. Yeah, a lot of ifs, but we're trying to do everything right, and we got very knowledgeable people in this. Harriet Perry from the University of Southern Mississippi, she'll be hatching the crabs that will be used in our for stocking the ponds. So what will happen? Sea Grant's involved, and the Sea Grant people here in North Carolina will take North Carolina female crabs down to Harriet. When they're ready to spawn, and she will take the eggs from them and raise them to a stage that they're suitable for stocking the ponds. So, and that'll take a few weeks for her to do that, and then they'll come back up here. We'll stock the ponds at the rate that she recommends, and then the monitoring will be done by students and faculty and members of the Sea Grant program here, as well as the college, Carteret Community College, will be involved also. So we've got a lot of good people involved, and we're going to use all of their expertise to try to make this thing work. If it works, we'll be shedding crabs the first time from the pond sometime in the fall, maybe as early as September or early October. That's our goal anyway. So, and then if that goes, then next year we'll add two more ponds. facility and hopefully this thing will grow from there.
Well, that's really exciting to kind of get to be a part of this kind of early stages of this venture and to like get to work with all these different people to hopefully make it happen.
Absolutely. We're very excited about it. And like I say, I can't express enough how important it is to have the people involved that are. Like I say, Chuck Warrick with the Sea Grant Program, Dave Eagleston has done some work with crabs and ponds, and then Harriet Perry down in Mississippi. These people are going to be key to making this thing work right. Clay and I will be here. We're going to be looking at things. Students will be monitoring the growth, and our idea is to shed crabs when they become reach that point of maturity that we can put them in our shedders. So most of this work and most of the oversight is going to be done by people who know what's going on rather than me.
You kind of described this a little bit, but I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about like what kinds of everyday work you do to maintain and keep this business running, to like take care of the crabs and any other sort of things that you kind of have to make sure you take care of on a daily basis.
Well, basically, as I told you earlier, most of my business has been in the crab meat and crab business. Mm-hmm. As soft shells came in later, soft shells has been only about 6 or 8 weeks of the year is involved in shedding the soft crabs for us.
Mm-hmm.
We're only doing it when what we call the peeler run makes enough peelers available for us to be, commercially viable for us to go out and buy. Crabs do shed year round, but the volume of crabs is high enough in the spring that we can fill up our shedder tanks and keep them running steady for 6 or 8 weeks. Sometimes it doesn't last that long, sometimes it may go a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
And when that's running, that's pretty much 24/7. You have to have somebody back there monitoring the shedding operation round the clock, taking the crabs out when they get to the point where we were able to pack them and ship them on the live market. Most of our soft crabs are sold live.
Mm-hmm.
So that becomes a very critical stage. We can't take them out too early because the shell is too soft, and the crabs have a tendency to collapse on themselves. They don't have enough structure in the shell, enough firmness in the shell to even hold it up. So when you take them out of the water, the shell kind of collapses on them and they suffocate. So we let them firm up long enough to where the shell can maintain its structure, its shape when you take them out of the water, and we pack them and we keep them cool and we can ship them. So that is an important part of this. As they shed, we move them to holding areas for firming up, and we have to monitor that very closely. If we let them stay there too long, they get too firm and they're no longer a soft crab.
Mm-hmm.
If we take them out too early, then their life expectancy gets shortened quite a bit, and that doesn't work well when we're shipping them across the road. We ship sometimes to New York. A lot of the people that buy from us actually come pick up right here, and they go distribute to restaurants. But you still have to have a life expectancy out there that can get this crab from us to a restaurant and still be alive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the important thing. And this is pretty much traditional in all of the shedding operations here in North Carolina. Everybody doing it understands that, and they're very careful about handling their crabs properly. So during that 6 or 8 weeks, it's very intense, and that's pretty much. But what we want to do here with this, we want to extend that and have enough crabs available for us so that we can increase our market out there. Instead of just 6 or 8 weeks of live crabs, maybe we can get 5 or 6 months of live crabs.
Mm-hmm.
Wintertime, we're not sure if we'll be able to raise these crabs during colder weather, but maybe we can get them in the ponds early enough. We can get an early start next spring, following this fall run that we hope to have. Does that answer that question, or does that cover that the way you were expecting?
Yeah, that does, and that kind of brings brings in something really interesting to think about, which is, I mean, even fluctuations in things like time of year and temperature matter a lot, especially in these kinds of operations where, to an extent, you also have to, you know, wait on the life cycle of the animal in order for it to work out.
You're exactly right. Temperature is very critical. Transporting, like I say, we early part of the spring, we went down to some of the crabs we shed here were as far as Brunswick, Georgia, and we transport them up back up here. So transporting them becomes a critical issue. At that stage, the poodle crabs are actually they're harder to ship and transport than the small scale is. So we have to be very careful about them, and we try to. If we picked up crabs this afternoon, I would try to have them back here by late tomorrow morning. You know, 1 or 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and get them put into the cheddar tanks before they got too much time on them. We started out this year back in March. I think our first pickup in down south was in March. We transported them. We had a good transport on those because the outside temperature was still cool. But then once we put them in our tanks, the nighttime temperatures got low enough that our water temperature got too low. So the crabs weren't shedding out as quickly as we wanted them to. Mm-hmm. So we actually had to add heat into our shedding operation to bring the water temperature up to around 70 to 72 degrees. The crabs shed much, much quicker, and they have less problems when the water temperature is up in the 70s to 74. So we actually had to put heat in our facility because the cool nights, we were getting nights down in the low 50s and 40s back in late March and early April.
Mm-hmm.
So we bring our room temperature up, and that heats the water up a little bit because we are recirculating. And we were able to have a real good shed during that period of time. Now, as it progressed on, the outside temperature got much warmer, and adding heat became less of a problem. By mid-April, we shut the heating elements off, or actually just removed them from the room of the facility, and just operated on the daytime temperatures, nighttime temperatures, ambient outside, and did very well. And most of that was with our North Carolina crab. We had already finished the Georgia and South Carolina crab by that time. And so our North Carolina crabs, we didn't have to add the heat, which is a tremendous expense.
I can imagine.
Tremendous expense, yeah. So, and then when you finish the operation, taking them out of the warm water and packing them, we bring them into a cool room around 40 degrees, 40 to 42 degrees, and they'll stay there during the rest of their cycle, hopefully, in the trucking process, shipping to our customers, and all the way to the restaurant. And that seems like a good temperature for the crab to stay alive for several days sometimes and reach it to its final destination.
All right. That is very intricate, but also really interesting. And so you've mentioned lots of different things. Like you mentioned things like heating elements and tanks and ponds and shipping materials and trucks that you use for transit. And so I was wondering what other resources and equipment did you need when you were starting your business? And what were like the main primary startup costs?
Oh, God, wow. Well, it's you go all the way back to 1979, my dad and I built this building and started back then. At that time, it was just strictly a crab picking operation. We did a little bit of frozen crab out of here, but most of it was fresh picked crab meat. And this operation ran that up until picking operation until 98. And in 1998, we stopped the picking operation. It was no longer a profitable for us to pick crab meat at this location.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, we were actually involved in, of course, the soft shell operation came in, like I told you, about the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
We started shedding a few soft crabs. It was a very small operation, and it was only just a few weeks of the year. So it was just a bonus. It really didn't add a lot to our bottom line at that point. So we started just buying and reselling crab meat, and a lot of it was farm. and pass it through them and just take a slight markup on it or a commission if you want to put it that way. So that was pretty much our business in the late 90s and the early part of this century. And then as our soft shell operation, we expanded that a little bit. And the foreign meats, we were not completely out of that, but we don't do as much of that as we did back 10 or 12 years ago. We're still a little bit, but most of our business now is local product, clams, oysters, a few fish, and of course the soft shell crabs.
Okay. And so I know you said that things have kind of changed around over the years, but I guess...
Oh, absolutely, yeah. But, yeah. Cost-wise, back in 79, we had a lot of our own labor in building this building. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have a tremendous amount of money, but the property and building back then, we probably had $100,000 invested by the time we got it opened up. And over the years, we made some improvements. It would be foolish of me to go back. We just make them as we need them, It's, mm-hmm. Well, we need to do this or we need to do that. In the soft shell operation, we bought some used pieces from some friends over in Aurora, over near over in Beaufort County, and brought that over here and installed it. We picked up some used pieces that were actually donated or given to us. People wanted to get rid of them. We built a shed type roof back in, 2000 to cover the tanks that we had. And I guess our biggest single investment more recently was when we went from a pass-through system to a recirculating system. And that required us to put in larger reservoir tanks, which hold about 6,000 gallons of water. I think between 6,000 and 7,000 gallons of water. And then we redid all of our shedding tanks and added to it. So we did that, and we expanded the shed, the cover, the roof line, and enclosed it a little bit for the heating purposes. So that was done. That changeover to the recirculating system was 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that cost us probably around $10,000 or $12,000. Sizable investment for us, a small business like us,
mm-hmm.
but it really has paid off.
So you would say, this is kind of complicated probably given all the changes that you've been making, but how many years would you say it took you to turn a profit from some of these big changes that you made?
Oh, the changes were almost pretty much a turnaround right away. We started making those changes during the fall, and by the time the crab season or the beaver crab season came around, we had it ready to go. So even that first season, we were able to cover most of our costs on that and show a slight profit. But again, you have to look at it. That profit is only for a 6 or 8 week period, so that doesn't carry. That doesn't carry much of the business. There has to be a lot of other things going on with an operation like that. Six weeks of the year just doesn't cut it.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
So that's the idea of this new project is to extend that 6 weeks, hopefully get a longer period of time that we can operate the shedding tanks.
Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned that time is essentially of the essence, and it's such a short season available to you, and you've mentioned how important temperature is. So are there other reasons that might cause you to have a less profitable season?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're talking about a wild-caught item at this point. So storms, which do affect us, bad weather, just variations in the wild catch that come about for whatever reason, maybe, again, bad weather, maybe pollution, maybe just an off year for crabs. You can't. It's hard to say. I mean, there's so many factors that get involved when you're looking at a wild caught product. And we go down as far as Georgia to acquire some of the crabs. Crabbers sometimes don't crab. They want to do something else. So maybe they get better jobs and they quit crabbing, and then you're out of a source for that particular area until you can reestablish yourself. And they're very independent people. dental. So that also becomes an issue. Then you got to start looking for places to go with them to move the extra, because once they take them out of the water, you need to use the product rather than lose it. So it can be an oversupply very quickly. It can be a shortage of supply very quickly. And then you can have things that just work perfect every year, two or three years in a row. So fortunately, the last couple of years have been worked out very well for us. Went down south, got an early start on the crabs, bringing them up here, and being able to recirculate the water allowed us to get that water temperature up when we add heat in that room. If we were using the pass-through when we were doing before, that water is coming straight out of the river, just running through the tanks and going right back out. So you almost can't control that temperature. By having it in a recirculating system, now we can bring that temperature up by adding a little heat in the facility.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah, that makes sense.
But the supply is always an issue with wild caught. It's always an issue. You can have abundance, you can have shortages, and the reasons for them can be very many. I mean, it's just, you got so many variations, you got so many factors that can become involved in catching any type of wild seafood item. Bad weather, stormy weather, you might have high winds, they can't get out for two or three days, and sometimes they even lose their traps because of high tides and high winds, or they can't find them, so you might be down for a week. And with the peeler operation, that may cost you part of the season. I mean, if you only got 6 weeks, mm-hmm. and the crabber loses a week, it can't get out because of storms or high winds or strange tides or whatever, then you lose that. You don't get it back. You just have to wait and hope for a better one next year. So we're thinking that the idea is maybe if we can control that a little better by the pond situation, not only control the supply side as far as what you're going to have, but also look at it from the stability of having something on a more consistent basis, more weeks of the year. And if you've got multiple ponds, maybe you can stagger those where one pond comes off in September, another pond comes off in October, and then maybe if you had four ponds, you could say, well, I've got a pond for August, September, October, November. And so you don't overload your system, but you have something that can now run you 12 weeks rather than just 6 or 8.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure people that go to the restaurant.
Well, that's right. I mean, and look, everybody prefers the live crab. The live crab brings a much higher price. You have a lot of frozen soft shells on the market. They start, and most of the people who are cutting and freezing soft shells wait until wait late in the season when the soft shells on the peelers have moved up north of me, up toward the Virginia line and Maryland line, because we got some tremendous shedding operations up in Virginia and Maryland, even in the northern part of North Carolina, some operations that shed just many, many more times the crabs than I do. And the market becomes overloaded with live soft shells, so the price drops drastically. And so these operations will then sell them to a cutting house or somebody who's going to cut them and freeze them. A frozen crab might sell for $24 a dozen, where in the spring we might sell a live soft shell for $60 a dozen. So it's a big difference. So the live market is much stronger. Everybody prefers buying a live crab. So if we can supply them with a live crab more parts of the year, we're going to have more money coming back to us out of the live crab than we would by having to cut them and freeze them when we're actually overloaded. And that happens not every year, but it happens quite a lot in this business. It's been about a month ago now. The soft shell price went so low that they had to stop buying from the peeler crabs from the guys, and the market went down to probably $18 or $20, and that's when these freezing operations start buying them up. freeze them, and then they'll put them out as a frozen product later. It's a good product, don't get me wrong. It's an excellent mm-hmm. product, and they do a good job. But people do prefer live crab.
Wow, I didn't realize it had dropped so much recently, but that is interesting, and I can see why people would prefer live, even if the frozen is perfectly good. You know, there's something, I can see people finding that more appealing in some ways.
They do, and I can't explain it to you, because if you've got a good operation, and they do the product the way they're supposed to and handle it properly, the frozen crab, you've got something that can hold in good frozen storage for 9 or 12 months, and still have an excellent product going out. But the live crab does bring a much better price, and the distributors who go to the restaurants, and they'll tell the restaurant, I've got live soft shells. They'll take one of the boxes in, open the top, show it to them, and the crabs are all there. They're moving their eyes around, and they're smiling.
Generally, so you're based out of Carteret County. Are aquaculture businesses common in Carteret County and in the surrounding area?
Well, if you consider the shedding operation as aquaculture, yes, it's not. It is. I don't want to say it's common, but there are several around and have been for many years. Carteret County, going way back, even when I was a child, there were people operating small shedding operations. When I say small, at that time they did it, their shedding was in flutes. They didn't have on land facilities. They actually built little flutes that sat out in the water, like a boat, and they had cages underneath them, about 6 inches deep, and they would put their pewter crabs in that, and they would wade out to them or take a small skiff and pole out to them and pull the soft shells out as they shed. So I don't know if you want to call that aquaculture, but that was way back when I was a kid. I remember that. So, and I guess it was sometime in the early 70s they started pumping water and putting their tanks up on land, building stands for them, and it became a much more workable operation, easier to tend to, easier to watch over. Because floats out there, the seagulls were eating their crabs. Other predators, eels, would get in there and eat the crabs. So about anything that you can think of would get in there and destroy the crabs. And so by moving these tanks up on the shore and just pumping water to them, they were actually able to increase their production and make it a lot easier on the people doing it. They didn't have to wade out. They didn't have to, get in a skiff and pole out to their floats. And so production picked up. That's been going on for years. With us, we've got ours in an enclosed facility now and a recirculating system. So that's just another advancement. Again, ours it's not the first of that kind, but I think we're the only one in Carteret County that is using a recirculating system. And that allows us to buy those crabs early. At Georgia and South Carolina, crab are not available to some of these boys who don't have closed-in facilities because the outside temperature just gets too cold.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the night, and that makes it difficult. The crabs tend to just hang up. They don't shed properly. And the longer you have to sit on them, the more loss you have. So by being able to warm our water up in that early part of the season, we're able to shed those crabs from Georgia and South Carolina in mid-March.
All right. And so kind of, you had mentioned that you started working with your dad on this in the 70s, and so was this like a business venture y'all entered in together, or was this a business your father had started and you've worked together? And did you know someone in the business to kind of give you advice as you went along?
Well, let me tell you, I graduated from NC State in 1971. I went straight into the seafood business from there with a group out of South Carolina. They were canning crab meat. It was probably the largest producer of crab meat in the world, probably, I would guess. And they had two locations. They had one in South Beaufort, South Carolina, and one in Belhaven, North Carolina. And so I worked with them for 7 years. And then I left. They had me stationed down in Beaufort, South Carolina, and we built a brand new modern facility down there to process crabs. And we were processing a tremendous amount of crabs, but it was a canning facility. So most of our crab meat went into a 6-ounce can and was sold at the grocery level. I think it was in 78. One of my former professors, Frank Thomas, was over at Shaw Hall, and Frank called me up and they said they had a position open here in North Carolina, and I decided to take it. So I left the Blue Channel Corporation, came home, and worked with the Agricultural Extension, and at that time, Sea Grant and the Agricultural Extension supported my position here in Carter County. I was the director of the seafood lab. My father had retired from law enforcement. He was chief of law enforcement with the North Carolina Marine Fisheries for many years, and he retired. And he worked for some years doing some electrical work with friends, just odd jobs to keep himself busy. So while I was home, he decided he wanted to do a crab plant, so he and I got involved in the crab plant. So it's been a series of events over a lifetime to get to where we are today.
That's a good story, though, and I like this kind of winding path that you took that ultimately brought you back to North Carolina, and it's neat that you started this business with your dad.
Yeah, it's been a winding path, let me tell you. Look, I've followed blue crabs into Mexico. I've been down there setting up facilities. I've been in Colombia, South America. I've been in Ecuador. I've spent a month in Nigeria trying to set one up, but that didn't work. And we bought crab meat out of the Philippines, bought crab meat out of Indonesia. I've had quite a winding path.
It's been fun. Yeah, and I think that's really neat that you also got to travel and as part of this business, because I think that's something that maybe people don't necessarily think about, is that you can also kind of take this globally in some cases.
Absolutely, and it's been an experience, and it's been wonderful. I enjoyed the travel, enjoyed the people I met, and I still have a lot of friends in Mexico, Ecuador, and Colombia.
That's so great. I have just a couple more questions for you. So kind of thinking about this long, winding journey that you've had, what was a challenge that you encountered that you didn't anticipate?
God. I don't know if I could say you didn't anticipate it. I mean, anytime you go into a venture, you try to prepare yourself for worst cases. I can't think of anything that really caught me off guard or surprised me. I mean, things have never worked. Have always had difficulties and have not always worked out the way we wanted them. But I can't say that I was surprised by it. I mean, it's you prepare yourself for things that are going to let you down, and when it happens, it happens, and you just move on. So I can't say that I was ever caught off guard or I don't know. I don't even know how to answer that other than that way.
Oh, that's perfectly fine. And so then just kind of my last two questions that kind of go together is, so what is a piece of advice you would give to someone who's interested in getting into the crab industry? And I think I kind of might know the answer, but would you do this over again?
For me, yes, I would. I think if you go back and I would look at a few things I would change if I knew in advance what I'd done wrong. But I would do this again. I've thoroughly enjoyed the things I've done, and like I say, I've met some really fine people and had some my early career with the Blue Channel Corporation, some of the most knowledgeable people in this business, and they're all gone now. But I learned a lot from them. They're just memories I always have. And of course, Frank Thomas with the university was a great asset to my career, and just an extremely fine. He's no kin to me, by the way, but an extremely fine man and a great asset to me. As far as recommending something to somebody like this, I think if they're truly interested in the crab business, they need to find somebody that they can go and work with that's doing this for a short period of time. Don't jump into this feet first. It's not for everybody. It really isn't. I think like I say, I've been lucky. I got in with a good group of people early, learned a lot from them, and I don't think, had it not been for those first 8 years with the Blue Channel Corporation, I don't think I would have stayed in this business or even got in this business. So I think anybody that's thinking about it, spend enough time to do your homework and look at it and understand what you're getting into. In the business world, there's very few things that's going to make you millions of dollars like YouTube or the computer industry does. There's a lot of work involved in it, and it's not for everybody. It really isn't. I mean, it's sometimes it's dirty work. I mean, you go home smelling like hard crabs, and to the point where you actually take your clothes off on the back porch and rinse yourself down with a water hose. It's just not for everybody. But if you like it and enjoy it and you want to do it, then look at it and see where the benefits are. See what you can do to maybe improve the business. I think that's something we need today is more ingenuity. The crab picking business, which I told you I started out in, is pretty much the same as it was 100 years ago. I mean, there's been very little innovation in picking crab meat. I think young people with their access to information today could probably step in and really bring us into the 21st century. We still hand-pick crab meat. We still cook the crabs the same way we did way back, and put them on tables, and we have pickers that go in and pick the crab meat out and pack it in, either fresh or sometimes pasteurized, but there's been very little innovation in trying to mechanize that operation, and I think, we're probably, from a business standpoint, we're way behind the rest of the food industry. We're just not making those advances in how we do things.
Well, I kind of like that you close on what sounds like really solid advice to me and a kind of call to move forward and keep thinking about what we can do with this industry, because it makes it sound like there's a lot that people can do in the future. Just gotta get going with it.
It's going to take, I think, I see it in the younger people. My grandchildren, they're much smarter than I was at that age. and I think they realize that, things have got to, we've got to look at this industry differently from what we have in the past. I mean, give an example, the crab picking industry, when Dad was still picking out here, There were 38 crab plants in North Carolina. And this is fresh crab meat being produced in North Carolina. And those 38, some of them would produce, you know, 2,000 pounds of crab meat a day. Some would produce 800. Today we've got 5 active crab plants.
Okay.
And none of them, and I think there's one in Columbia that probably can produce a couple thousand pounds a day. There might be one over in Aurora that can produce 1,200 or 1,500 pounds a day. And that's it. I mean, so you look at it from that standpoint, there's not, they're still doing it the same way. They're still hand-picking. Finding pickers to fill the slots is becoming more and more difficult because young people don't want to go in and get dirty like that. They don't want to smell like crab when they go home to their families. They want clean jobs. They you know, whatever it is, they just want something that's just a little different. So it's harder and harder to find pickers. And the industry's changing. And unless somebody comes in with some way to mechanize or improve the picking operation, we're just going to continue to get less and less good quality crab meat. And that's why the imports have become the biggest part of our crab meat supply here in North America. We rely on mostly Asian meats today coming out of Vietnam, Indonesia, the Philippines, and a little bit out of Mexico. So they've still got labor situations where they can get people in to pick the crab meat, and it's becoming more and more difficult here. And it will there too. As their economies improve, people find, you know, what they consider a better job, something that's more attractive to them.
Mm-hmm.
When I started with the Old Blue Channel Corporation, we had over 200 employees at the Beaufort plant, and we had about 160 at the Belhaven plant. And, you know, and most of them, even then, most of them were older. I mean, some of the ladies that worked at the Belhaven plant were 65, 70, and some of them even to their 80s. And my wife's grandmother picked crab until she was 92. So, so they, and as those older women, and it was mostly women back in the 60s, today you see a few men that are picking crab meat. Back then it was almost all women. And as they either quit, they didn't show up, I guess they aged out, or maybe they died off, it was harder and harder to get young people to come in. And again, it's the same thing. They could go uptown and work in a dress shop, or they could go on the beaches and work in a hotel, you know, and they could come home and they were nice and clean and neat, and they worked in an air-conditioned room that didn't smell like crap all day long. So they prefer that, and they probably made decent money. Now, we in the crab industry paid them, and has always done this, we paid them what we call piecemeal work.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually got, if they produced more, they got more money. But we still met minimum wage. So you meet minimum wage, but the pickers that could pick, you know, 6 or 7 pounds an hour could really make a very decent salary back in the 70s and 80s. But everybody couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we are. And today, if you check out the number I gave you on 5 plants, that may be off a little bit, but it's certainly not many more than that. It might even be less this year.
Mm-hmm.
There's not many picking operations around.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, give an example. Georgia has no picking plants left. There's no pickers left in Georgia that I know of.
Wow.
South Carolina doesn't have any picking plants left. North Carolina's down to just a few. I think there's still probably 15 or 20 in Virginia, and maybe Maryland has 10 or 12. That becomes a problem for the crabbers, too, because now the crabbers, if they have big catches, where do they go with their crabs? The basket market takes up a little bit of it. They can take the big crabs, the big Jimmy, what we call Jimmy crabs, the big male crabs, put them in baskets and sell them on the basket market up in Baltimore and Philadelphia and even in New York for good numbers. But the what's left is the lower quality crab. Where are they going to go with that? There's no picking houses to take.
Mm-hmm.
There's not as many. So a lot of these crabbers are
And so this kind of goes back to your idea of, like, we need this kind of innovation in this industry in order to move this forward and to kind of, I guess, rework it, or even you could think of it as almost like change or save it in its own way.
I think so, yeah. I would say that's exactly what I think. And, of course, there's a lot of people don't agree with me, but that's the way I think. I think we have to look at improving this, bringing this industry into the 21st century.
All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate your insight, and I certainly learned a lot in this interview, a lot about not just your business, but also just the crabbing industry at large, because I didn't know a lot about it before this conversation. So I just want to thank you for giving your time.
Okay, Caitlin, glad I could help you. And if you're down this way, I'd be glad for you to come by.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay.
You have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Bye.